Please bring me back my child. That's all I ask from you is my child back.
July 10th, 1998. The day held so much promise for Shannara Mobley. For the Jacksonville teenager, the birth of a baby girl that Friday morning gave her new purpose, the chance to make her troubled life right. But in a matter of hours, it all went so wrong. That's when a woman dressed in scrubs.
Hi, I'm Mark Woods. I'm here with another Page One podcast, a special one today. We have investigative reporter Eileen Kelly, and this is kind of a podcast about a podcast. You've been quite busy. She has been working on what we've titled Have You Seen Kamaya? And it's the Times Union's first ever serial podcast, planning five episodes. First released Tuesday, July 10th, because that's the 20th anniversary of the kidnapping of hours-old Kamaya Mobley from a Jacksonville hospital. The episodes will be available at jacksonville.com/Kamaya, K-A-M-I-Y-A-H, Apple Podcasts, and other popular podcast apps. And first episodes, we'll be telling this in a chronological order, so maybe I'll let you kind of explain what the podcast is, and I don't know if you want to start with also just had a big Sunday story. The title online is I'm Still Lost. Maybe talk about that Sunday story.
Thanks, Mark. Yes, sometime in May, my editor, Mary Kelly Polka, came to me and said, clear your plate, you're going to be really busy for the next 6 weeks. And I said, well, I really don't want to clear something because Gloria Williams is going to be sentenced. And she's like, it has to do with this. So I later went into her office and she had presented the idea of the Times Union giving a try at a serial podcast done in kind of narrative story form. And she tapped me, and which I guess makes sense because I've been writing about this for 2 years now. I went up to South Carolina in January 2017 when we got word that there was a break in this case, and I've been writing about it quite a bit since. So I did learn that writing a podcast is a bit different than writing a news story. Mary Kelly and I were driving to an interview to interview Nat Glover, the sheriff at the time, and I was so proud of how I began it, and I was reading it to her, and she was pretty funny, like, okay, you're being too much Eileen Kelly, the news reporter.
Right.
You need to be Eileen Kelly, the storyteller, because you've just given away the ending in the first 5 minutes.
Hmm.
And so, you know, I stepped back, and I mean, it still is very much, you know, writing as a journalist and reporting, but it's more like writing a screenplay because it's done in a narration. Mm-hmm. And so episode one, which as Mark said, comes out tomorrow, we take you to that very first day, that absolutely horrific day for Shannara Mobley and what happened. And I really do think you're going to enjoy it. It's pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah, I just got a little tiny sneak peek, and yeah, it was pretty powerful. And it's obviously different from others of us in here trying our hand at podcasts, but we're just basically sitting here chatting, and you've taken old clips,
mm-hmm,
and a lot of fresh interviews.
Yes.
And so this is highly reported, highly produced by Gary Mills. So yeah, talk about one of the, you interviewed Shannara Mobley. That's one of the more, one example of the reporting you've done. Talk about that interview.
I did. From my understanding, well, 20 years ago, she was out, you know, in front of the television cameras and speaking with news reporters. She was desperately trying to get the word out that she wanted her baby. And at the 10-year anniversary, former colleague Jim Schottler did a wonderful story about her, about the last 10 years of her life. And then she pretty much said she was done with the media and society, too. She's very haunted by this still, 20 years later. She doesn't feel like the community had her back. She feels that people blame her for, you know, saying she had a role in the kidnapping, and she's still very much a broken 16-year-old, even though she's 36 now. And I saw her in court the few days that there was a sentencing hearing, and I handed her a business card, and I, you know, introduced myself and told her how sorry I was that, you know, for what she's gone through in life. And just a few weeks ago, I picked up the phone, and she agreed to do an interview, and she has not done a national interview. So she invited us into her home. We were videotaping it as well as recording it for the podcast. And I told her that, you know, what we were, you know, attempting to do here at the Times Union and Jacksonville.com is to do a narrative story on what happened, and that I really wanted her voice. It was time for her to speak her mind about what's going on, you know, her feelings about Jacksonville, the community, her feelings about her daughter, her feelings about Gloria Williams. And boy, it was a tough interview. It was very emotional. She's a broken woman. She really is. And I get it. She's really tortured here. You know, for 18 years, she had dreamt about this moment of seeing her little girl again. And, you know, she described, you know, these, you know, fantasies that pop through your head as exactly as I would have thought the same thing, you know, except for I would be running through a field of daisies. You know, I don't think she said daisies, but, you know, mother, daughter running with arms stretched wide and, you know, the spinning around, and that's what she envisioned. And it didn't turn out that way for her. You know, there certainly was the elation, but the two of them are struggling with each other. There's a deep divide with them. And Shannara has other children, and as well as a teenager. And Kamaya was almost 19, you know, when they found her. And so she's still, you know, a little bit of angst, teenager stuff. And Shannara, you know, said she was prepared for that. But she's not prepared for her daughter to still love the abductor. And it just cuts to her heart. It truly is destroying her heart. And she has this veneer about her where she's trying to not let that happen, but it's so clearly happening. You know, she's trying to be strong for her other children and to go on with life, because Kamaya's always been in this backdrop. You know, these kids were raised, every one of them had been raised being told a story of the 8 hours that she spent with her. And her little boy, she has five other children. Her little boy, she's heard him tell people, no, Kamaya's dead. And, you know, she said that she would try and teach her kids lessons about Kamaya, like, you have a sister, and this is why you should not steal, like even gumballs kind of thing, you know. And so she would turn it into lessons. But the one little boy, Christopher, you know, she had heard him saying, well, I have a sister, but she's dead. And maybe that's his way of coping, or I don't know. But, you know, she never knew if her daughter was alive or dead for all these years, and had envisioned the arms open wide running scene. And it did not happen. And, oh, Mark, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah,
it's,
there's that one clip that we've posted some things from the interview, and the one that I don't know how many shares it's had already, where she says sometimes she thinks it'd be better if Kamaya had not been found. And that kind of gets to that that rawness you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I still lost. It's no winning situation. I don't have a relationship with my child. Right now, speaking at this moment, so I still lost. So what did I gain? Nothing. And honestly, I wish sometimes she would have never came back.
I didn't expect that. But she said it numerous times. She wasn't speaking out of anger. She's speaking out of, she's truly hurt. And she's trying to not hurt anymore. Because she's really trying to hold it together. I mean, she already had a very tough life. And we talked a lot about that. And the podcast does go into that. The episode one, we'll talk about that. That how Kamaya was supposed to make her life right for the first time. She had a very troubled life. And she looked at her pregnancy as a sign from God to give her a chance to make her life right. Because she was running away. She was really carrying on, making really bad choices in life. She did not have a stable home. It was just a giant merry-go-round, going from one relative's to the other to, you know, lying about her age to get babysitting gigs where she could stay the night, you know, have money, and then the money allowed her to run the streets. I mean, she was not a sheltered child at all. And I think so much still sticks with me here. I didn't necessarily know this from the court proceedings. I did not know it from the court proceedings or from the news coverage from the Times Union at the time, but she was all alone when she had that baby. There was no one there for her. It's a tragic story. And, you know, I know her daughter's hurting. Her daughter didn't ask for this. Her daughter was blindsided by this and then had a year and a half to process it before the rest of the world found out. Mm-hmm. And that's what really is destroying Shannara. You know, I believe Shannara that she was willing to forgive her daughter on some aspects of, well, you're a child and you didn't ask for this, but now that it's over, the court's over, Gloria's in prison, the fact that they're still talking and she still calls her mommy.
I think the judge talked about it during the case, how there were really no winners.
She said there were no winners. And, you know, there are no winners in this. But I don't think that makes Shannara feel any better. I think she doesn't want Gloria to even be considered, even her feelings to be validated or anything. She's the victim. Yeah, Shannara's not real happy with the judge. But there's, you know, her hands were tied. Shannara had actually told the judge that she thinks that Gloria should have the death penalty, and that was never on the table. Had it gone to trial, she could have received a life sentence. Had it gone to trial in 1998, like, let's say she was caught a week later, she would have spent between 4 and 5 years in jail, even if the baby was abducted in, like, the 60s or something.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, that's what the sentencing guidelines were, somewhere around 4 to 5 years. And so it's been very clear from going to all the court proceedings that the defense was always planning on having some sort of plea deal.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think as a journalist, I wanted there to be a trial because I wanted to see the daughter on the witness stand. She chose not to during the sentencing hearing. Shannara was called up. Kamaya's father was called up, Craig, the grandmother. They all gave statements to the judge to help her understand what the impact of this kidnapping has done to them. But Alexis/Kamaya chose not to. In yesterday's paper, there was this image of her. Her birth certificate now says Kamaya Mobley, but she's choosing to go by Alexis Manigo. That's why I'm kind of struggling calling her both.
I was going to ask
about
that. The podcast, how do you refer to her? Obviously, when you're describing the baby being stolen, you're going to say Kamaya. But
yes,
when you're talking about her in modern-day times, what do you refer to her?
For episode one is about the kidnapping.
Right.
It's that day, and so she's Kamaya.
Yeah.
And then episode two is about the search, this nationwide search. I mean, this story went international 20 years ago, and she's still Kamaya. And episode three, which I'm currently working on, this really has been an amazing labor of love here. She's going to be both. It depends on where I am. Episode three is mostly going to be in South Carolina, where she was raised, and as Alexis. So, and speaking of the names, within the story that came out Sunday, you know, Shannara said that she was probably going to start calling her Alexis, which, oh gosh.
Yeah, I saw that quote.
yeah. I mean, it's she's trying to protect her heart, and if she's Alexis and she's not Kamaya, she's not her daughter. She's just some girl named Alexis, you know.
So you mentioned South Carolina. Tell me where all you've gone to retell this story and and you've been thinking in terms of not just having your notepad out, but
So now it's carrying, you know, a recorder of some sort, you know, going into people's homes and talking, doing some interviews. I interviewed John Rabin for the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. He was one of the founders, and this was his case. And yeah, he was telling me that you don't forget your cases, and you certainly don't forget Kamaya. I mean, he didn't even have his file with him. He was speaking from, I believe he's in Georgia, and not up in Alexandria where the office is. And he was going from memory, and it was a very solid memory of what it was like down here. I mean, he came down and pulled everyone together, the FBI, the police, the nurses. He got another sketch artist. He said, the sketch is not going to work. You know, if you want people to see the sign, to notice the sign of this missing baby, you have to have a photo. And there were no photos taken. This is, you know, pre-cell phones and all of that. She's a 16-year-old. There was no family photos of the mother and daughter. I mean, the only tangible thing she had was footprints. That's the only thing that the hospital actually did. The hospital was supposed to photograph the baby, and that's, you know, some of the new details that we found out. That was protocol for exactly that reason, for in the event there's a kidnapping. And they did not do it. The hospital failed in so many ways.
And then you went up to South Carolina?
I did, but this was pre-podcast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so now I was up there for the breaking news story in January 2017.
But you have that in your head for the storytelling and...
Yes, yes.
I mean...
Oh, yeah. I was there for several days, you know, getting to know the area, trying to, you know, get family to talk. Went to their church. We were invited in, all of that. And they said... the pastor was just blown away by this, too. Gloria was very much a God-fearing, church-going woman that did a lot for her church. And so did the woman that... The young girl she raised as her own daughter. You know, you could just, in spite of the joyous atmosphere for any Sunday service that's, you know, around scripture and gospel music, which was just, the music was fabulous. You could see the pain, because they were like all bewildered by this too. I mean, the unimaginable didn't just happen to Shenora Mobley. It happened to this community of, who is this little girl? What? You know, people could not wrap their heads around this up there.
Obviously, you said you were living in, where were you living at this point?
I was living in Sarasota in 1998.
Do you remember?
I do. When I was driving up to Walterboro, I was saying, oh my gosh, I remember this. I absolutely remember this hunt for this little baby. We were all standing around the television when they had said, sent out media releases saying, get to the sheriff's office. We have, you know, something really important to tell you. And some of our, you know, crime beat reporters were hearing that it had to do with the kidnapping. And I remember looking up at the TV. I was just shaking my head and just like getting all nervous. And Ben Carnock, one of our newer reporters, says, you're dying to go up there, aren't you? And I was like, yes, send me. And they said, go. And I went.
And you interviewed folks who were here. Tom Wills was one of the WJXT anchor who was one of the people who, and how was he talking about this?
Oh, he's just such a wealth of knowledge. I mean, this is one of those stories that doesn't leave you, you know, even though every day is a new story when you're a journalist, this is one that really, really you remember. Just, you know, just like the guy from the National Center said, you don't forget certain things. And he was great. They gave us some footage, and he provided some insight because, again, I wasn't here, but I was watching the news back in Sarasota and reading about this case. We also spoke to Nat Glover. I'm hoping that I can get Kamaya Alexis. She has done some interviews, but I believe she's sold the story to ABC, so, because they're planning to make a movie, Lifetime ABC. So... We shall see. I think I'm gonna make another attempt and head north for this. It's been an amazing journey. It's been fun to see how it all works out, because I've always wanted to do a podcast. Gary has just done an extraordinary job putting this together, and it's really been a great labor of love for us.
Have you listened to other serial podcasts? before this, or have you listened after this?
I did. That was one of my homework assignments that Mary Kelly gave me. She told me to stay out of rabbit holes and to listen to a few. You know, I'm constantly tuned into NPR, and I think that that helped me just in terms of not just the, you know, morning edition type things, but, you know, like the reveal and just, mm-hmm. you know, storytelling. But yeah, so Mary Kelly, you know, did suggest that I do that. And she and Gary have been pulling a lot of audio and looking at, you know, trying to find voices for this as well. So it's, you know, we've all been working really hard and we're really proud. We are incredibly proud of episode one. Episode two is wrapped up too. I have not heard it yet. I'm hoping later today we will, so that I can, you know, we can make some changes if we need to. I'm writing three. I'm interviewing for five right now. I mean, you know, trying to balance them all out. So.
And are you enjoying? This is very different.
I'm loving it.
Okay.
I'm absolutely loving it. You know, I do have experience in narrative storytelling.
Sure.
And so in many ways it's a lot like it. But this is kind of like the old radio program, you know, it's dramatic and it takes you through a story of you know, this is a story of betrayal and lies, you know, and hope. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, the Sunday story, well, I'll read the start of it. Each year she'd buy a cake for the little girl she didn't know. Sometimes there'd be family trips or a big party in honor of the girl that wouldn't be there. Sometimes it wasn't so splashy. But always there was a cake with candles, and she'd make a wish or two. Like, wow. And then I remember that detail when you, during the course of this all playing out. So is that a part of that obviously was a great, compelling, chilling detail mm-hmm. for storytelling in a print form. Is that factor? Did you use that in the podcast?
I do for episode two. Okay. We end, episode two is about the search. You know, going from that first day to into the future about, you know, all the leads and, you know, with the interview with the National Center, with the Sheriff's Office, you know, how Shannara and the baby's father, Craig Aiken, how they were suspects this whole time. And it does end with that scene setter of Shannara buying this cake. What she would do, she would have a birthday party every year on July 10th. And she would cut a piece for herself, and then she'd cut a piece for her little girl, the little girl that wouldn't be there. And then she'd wrap it in the freezer just in case. And then each year when just in case didn't come, meaning, you know, her coming home, she would toss it, you know, a few months later, either when she moved or got a new refrigerator. And then the following year she'd start again. And each year, you know, another cake, another wish, another year without her daughter. So that's how we, you know, episode two ends. It's I was getting pretty teared up when I was reading it.
You got emotional?
it happens. Yeah.
Now, I imagine with some of this, you actually had to do the opposite, dial back the narrative to make it more straightforward, like.
For episode two is a little bit more of that. It's telling you what happened, but it's ending with some emotion,
right.
And all that. But so.
Well, I look forward to hearing more than the little snippet I've been allowed to hear so far. Hearing the whole first episode and the second and third, fourth, and fifth, I'll go listen right away.
Okay.
It's at jacksonville.com/Kamiah. Kamiah. That's where it'll be found mm-hmm. for everybody in Apple Podcasts and other popular podcast apps.
And then each week, each Tuesday, will be the next episode. So episode two will be next Tuesday.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, and not just on jacksonville.com, but we'd love it if you subscribe and take a listen. I really do think you're going to enjoy it. It's been an incredible process doing this, and I'm very proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really proud.
We're proud you're doing it.
Thank
and
you.
And we can cut this part, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. I know I thought about, you know, you just lost your mom. And, you know, for you to be working on this, you know, that's what we do. But to be telling a story of a mom
Yeah. The first day we went to tape, I was having a tough day, and you were there to help me. I used to talk to my mom a lot, and she would always, whenever I called her on the way in, she would say, do good at work, Eileen. You know, my mom raised kids, and I kind of broke rank, you know, keeping my name, not having kids, being a career woman, which probably didn't shock her, but it kind of did. But I know she loved reading my stuff, and I would send her copies, and she would pass it around at where she lived down in South Florida. And so I was sitting in Mary Kelly's office. She had asked me to do an outline for what I needed to get to pull this off in terms of what interviews and what photos and what documents. And I don't know, it was probably 15 pages. And she was like, whoa, this is a lot of work. And I had my phone on my lap, and it just started vibrating and vibrating. And my family has had, my brothers and sisters, there's five of us. We've had a group text going since my mom was diagnosed with cancer a year ago. And I just had this horrible feeling, and I looked at it, and I said, my mom's terminal. And she said, go. And I said, no, I've got to keep working. And I've seen my mother, and I've had amazing times with her. But this actually has helped me, because I have jumped into this like nobody's business, except for maybe the pension fund. Actually, I always do that. I jump into everything with gusto when it's a project. And I've been telling my mom about it, and she died on Saturday. I'm sad she didn't get to hear it, but she knew
all about it.
Yeah, it's kind of
what you were saying that she told you to do. This is a prime example of it, and kind of a
And so I'd come into this recording room with Gary, and I'd say, you know, do good, Eileen. You know, because the first day I was getting emotional, because I am an emotional person. but it's sad what happened to Shannara. You know, and so as we were recording one, I was. You know, it was with a heavy heart, but my heart is also heavy because of my mom, you know. Mm-hmm. And so this podcast has helped me. It's helped pour a lot of my energy and my compassion into this, you know. So thanks for being there for me too, Mark. I've had some tough days. You've seen me sitting here crying, so.
Well, we're a big team in here, that's for sure. So I know everybody... when they heard about it, everybody in here was feeling for you. So, but yeah, it struck me that the juxtaposition of you working on this huge project is, which is all about what is a mother, who's this girl's mother, and what, you know, her conflicted emotions of, you can understand why she wouldn't. Just go running back, because in her head, in her mind, this woman
she didn't ask for this. I mean, and I really do want to tell her side of the story. I was feeling sad, really sad, when I sat down to write the story that came out Sunday, because I kept thinking, what is Alexis/Kamaya going to think of this? Does she know this? Does she know what Shannara is going through? And I was really, really, really struggling with this. I don't like to inflict pain on people, you know. And as journalists, I mean, you know, we report the truth, but I don't like to intentionally hurt people, you know. I was really kind of struggling. But I told Shannara, I was like, let us be your voice. You need to say some things. You know, she's been tormented for 20 years, and so I let her have her voice. And it is my hope that they can repair their relationship. You know, Kamaya is a victim in this. She did not ask for this at all. Hopefully, maybe the two of them can sit down with the counselor.
Right. There's clearly not going to be some storybook ending to this story. No. But
yeah.
Maybe there are evolutions that you'll be covering in the future that will somehow be positive. I mean, I guess
I would like to hope so. You know, I do hope so.
Well, yeah, you've done it certainly done it justice, story after story in the print. So yeah, looking forward to
give a listen, everybody.
All the podcast coverage and this new venture for you and for us as a newspaper. So thanks so much, Eileen.
All right, and as my mom said, do good at work today, everybody.
That's perfect sign.
Okay.